Good morning, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Morning Drive. Bob Heck here with you here on a Wednesday morning. Thank you so much for tuning in. And before we get to our guest, I just want to remind everybody about PSA Days coming up. We have PSA Days here at PCTV and WTBR, and basically what that is an opportunity for you and your local nonprofit to come down and make a video for your organization or make a radio commercial for your organization, and it's really easy to do. We still have some spots available. PSA Days at PittsfieldTV.org. Again, PSA Days at PittsfieldTV.org. That's how you get in touch with us and asking for more information or to book your slot. PSA Days at PittsfieldTV.org. Our guest today, Beth Carlson, the Executive Director of the Berkshire Community Land Trust. Hi, Beth. Thank you so much for joining us.
Good morning.
It's been quite a challenge to get us in the studio. We've been kind of working at it the past couple of weeks.
We have been, yeah.
So talk to me about the Berkshire Community Land Trust. What exactly does the organization do?
So our focus is on providing land access for housing, farming, and light industry, basically. So what we do is we acquire land through gift or trust, and then we hold that land. And then for our housing projects, we are leasing the land to a homeowner on a long-term lease, but it's a ground lease, so the homeowner owns the home, and they're able to build equity, but because the land is taken out of the equation, the housing is that much more affordable. And we also do farming on this model, which is really, really exciting. And basically, we have right now we have 99 acres in farmland, and we have two farms on that land. And same model, the land is in trust with us, and then we lease it to the farmer for 98 years. On a nominal lease, so they're not paying very much, mm-hmm. But then they own the improvements and the infrastructure and the housing on the farm. So, and that even includes soil improvements. So, the amount of organic matter in the soil is measured at the beginning of their tenure, and then also at the end of their tenure, and the cash value is assigned to that. And that encourages, sort of soil, responsible soil, positive farming techniques. So then they're able to farm as long as they want, but they're building equity, they're benefiting from their stewardship of the land and from their improvements of the farm.
Okay, and like the farming, you lease it out to farmers, and they have a 98-year lease, but some folks, get out of it at some point?
Well, we haven't had a land transfer for a farmer yet. We have one farmer that's been farming on BCLT land for 25 years. So, and then the other farmer, their lease just started. So, yeah, but so that way the leases are renewable, so they can pass their farm along to their family if they want, but if they don't want to, then they can sell it. And it's sold not at market rate. The business part of it is sold not at market rate, mm-hmm. but replacement value less depreciation. So it's capped a little bit, but they're still benefiting from all of their labor.
And what types of people would be eligible for a program? Is it open to anybody? Or, I assume as far as the farmland goes, you want a farmer with, at least some experience in what they're doing, I would think, right?
Yeah, both of our farm projects came together organically. The farmer sort of came with the land. But we are hoping to acquire more land and then to have an application process. And we would be looking at the farmer's existing experience and their capacity to have a mortgage of some amount, because they will need to buy, the housing on the land.
Sure.
Right. But there's some flexibility in that. There's some ways to hold value back till the end of their tenure. So they would, we do try to make it really possible for new farmers to get onto the land.
Now, how does Berkshire Community Land Trust acquire the land?
Through gift or purchase. So right now, or a combination of both.
Okay.
So we have some properties that were sold to us at, you know, for below market rate, and some land that was given to us. And so we're working all of those angles. Yeah.
Are you actively looking to purchase land like you... You see, like, the land on sale, like, in the Eagle or on iBerkshires or something, and do you actively make the phone calls, or does somebody reach out to you first? How does that all work?
Well, right now, we are sort of vetting projects as they come up, and we're not sitting on a bunch of cash. So,
sure.
Unfortunately, we're not able to act on land immediately when it comes on the market, which is a real concern. I'm talking a lot about farming, but I'll get back to housing in a second. But Massachusetts is losing 12 and a half acres of farmland a day. And whereas we, you know, in the 1980s, across America, about 50% of your food was produced locally. Those numbers in Massachusetts today are under 10%.
Oh, wow.
So we really need our small farms. We're part of a lot of organizations that are trying to save this loss of farmland. Having local food is really, really important for the community and for the economy.
Is the farmland 12 and a half acres a day? That sounds like a lot. Is that, you know, through... you know, farmland going away for more housing or housing projects or things like that? How is it evaporating that much?
The biggest risk is development for low-density housing. Some farmland, unfortunately, is going into solar. So solar is great, but you don't want it on your prime soils, or you want it to be, if it's on a farmland, you want it to be supporting the farm operation. So there's definitely ways to work with solar, but to remove prime soils from the market and put them into solar is probably not the best use of farmland.
Now talk to me about prime soils. We talked before about how improvements to soil for the farmers would benefit them in the end through BCLT. I know nothing about that. What does that mean?
So I'm not the person to talk to about this.
Okay.
Berkshire Agricultural Ventures knows a lot about this, but basically prime soils are soils that are ideal for growing food. And, you know, some soil will be more rocky and it's better for grazing, you know, or it'll be more sandy or, you know, all of the things. There's, you know, maps of farmland and the types of soils that and the geology that goes into making that soil, which is not my area of expertise.
Okay. Well, you did talk about improving the soil. And I mean, can you just give us a basic layman's way of how you can improve the soil? If somebody had, like, at their own house has sort of rocky land that they wanted to build their own garden on, how would you go about improving that? Or is it not possible with certain...
Well, so soil that, I think it's always possible to improve the soil, and the soil that's best for growing food has a lot of organic matter in it. And carbon, and you're basically the sort of returning carbon to the soil, and that creates like this really healthy ecosystem that's really good for growing plants. And so the ways that you improve soil are basically by, you know, not using chemical fertilizers or pesticides, because that actually takes all the organic matter out of the soil. So it's composting, using compost, using like regenerative or eco-agricultural techniques, rotational grazing, which is grazing by moving either chickens or goats or sheep. Constantly and making sure that they're not going back to the same place, you know, after a certain period of time. That's like a super really great way to really quickly improve the soil. And the really, really interesting thing is that in terms of carbon retention in the soil, this is something that people aren't aware of. You know, trees are, you know, carbon retention machines, basically. They store a lot of that carbon in their bark. and in their trunks. Whereas if you're growing pasture land with rotational grazing, the grass actually stores all that carbon in the soil, and it gets to the soil much faster. So rotational grazing of livestock is one of the, and, you know, promoting healthy pastures and is one of the best ways that you can improve the soil really quickly and get the carbon back in the dirt.
Okay. This morning. Oh, go ahead.
Sorry, that was all a little technical.
No, I like it. I like it. And, yeah. We're with Beth Carlson, Executive Director of Berkshire Community Land Trust, Inc. And there's a film screening this Sunday. Why don't you tell us about it?
Yeah. So we're screening Prairie Prophecy, which is a film about Wes Jackson's work with the Land Institute out in Kansas. And it's actually relevant for our area. Wes Jackson has been developing through, you know, breeding techniques, a perennial wheat called Kernza. And perennial wheat is really cool because it means that the land doesn't get tilled like every year. It just gets tilled like once every 6 year, but the crop like continues to produce. So the film is about that, and the panel is amazing. We're co-sponsoring with Berkshire International Film Festival, and Lillian Lennox of the Roaring Brook Foundation will moderate. And we have Will Conklin from Greenagers. Greenagers is actually growing some perennial mixes from the Land Institute on their land. We have Piyush Labwitor, and I'm not pronouncing his name quite correctly, but he's a Kernza farmer that is growing food, and he works with Grow Food Northampton. So he's actually growing Kernza, which is super exciting. We also have Lisa Winkler of New Perennials from Middlebury College in Vermont, and Michael Johnson, who's the filmmaker, coming for this panel.
Now, talk to me about Kernza. It can be tilled every 6 years.
Yeah, so it's basically a grain that you can use like wheat. You can make beer with it and bread and all that stuff. And its roots are like 18 feet long, so they're really, really long and deep. And that means that it's really holding and drawing carbon down into the soil. And because every time you till, you release carbon. Mm-hmm. And so wheat, which is about, you know, 3 to 4 feet high, and its root system is about 3 to 4 feet, then it just gets tilled under, you know, every year. So perennial crops are less work for the farmer, and but also better for the earth.
Now, how did this get developed? This is a relatively recent thing, I assume.
Yeah.
Where were we on this for the last 200 years?
Yeah. So it's basically a breeding process. So it's a very slow process of crossing and mixing. It's not like genetically modifying, like mm-hmm. where you're in the lab changing the DNA. This is actually, they're basically taking wheatgrass and, you know, selecting the ideal properties and then, you know, crossing that and growing that. And so it takes, you know, I think they've been working on this for 25, 40 years, something like that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So is it something like you talked about changing DNA? Is it something along those lines as far as like cross-pollination? Is it sort of getting to that weird ethical area or no?
No, because this is actually like the natural selection process. It's not actually altering, you know, in mm-hmm. a lab, which has all these other implications. So it's like just like you might replant your best tomato, you know, over and over again. That kind of, yeah.
So they basically find the best strains of wheat and
of wheatgrass. Yeah.
Wheatgrass.
Yeah.
Let that roll.
Yeah, exactly. And then just keep growing it and growing, you know, picking the best plants, picking the seeds from the best plants, replanting them. And that sort of helps to As far as I understand it, you should also look on the Land Institute's website to really understand the process.
Okay. I know I'm sort of pushing you in a direction you're not expertise on, but of course, that's the part I'm interested in, you know? It's So, like, how do you determine, and I'm probably I'm out of bounds on this one as far as your expertise goes, but, like, how do you determine which ones are the best?
I think they're looking at productivity and the size of the grain. Because ultimately we're talking about creating food, you know, and there's not. So the reason that I think this is interesting for the Northeast is we're not growing a lot of our own grain right now. There are some there's some grain being grown in Hudson Valley and I believe in the Northampton area. But I think like less than 1% of all agriculture in Massachusetts is grain. So that's just another resilience issue for us to be able to grow our own grain.
And is that like a weather thing where, you know, we get such crappy weather for a few months of the year that the regular wheat doesn't hold well there?
I think it's a combination of a shorter growing season and also not having sort of the large tracts of land that make grain profitable.
So it's so with grain, it is a, you know, more is more approach. The you have to have a lot of area in which to grow it in order for it to be worth it, for lack of a better term.
That's certainly true for, I would say, most of the grain production in the United States. But I think that growing grain for local uses, it could be done with smaller swaths of land.
Okay.
Yeah.
And more about the film, the was it Prairie Prophecy?
Prairie Prophecy.
So it's this Sunday. Where would people go to, first off, register for it? And where is the event?
So it's at the Triplex. And the tickets are available on the Triplex website and the Berkshire International Film Festival website as well.
Okay, and how much are tickets?
$15.
That's not bad.
It's great. Yeah, and there's a reception with food afterwards. We're showing an hour-long version of the film, so we have a decent amount of time to talk to these amazing panelists, and then a reception in the lobby.
Now, how difficult was this to all put together? Because we got the Berkshire International Film Festival involved, you got the Triplex Cinema involved, and you got all these wonderful panelists involved. Were you the one that had to put this all together, or did you have some help? And how big of a undertaking was it?
Well, partnering with Berkshire International Film Festival and then also the Triplex made it like that part like super easy. And then just getting the panel together actually ended up being really easy because it was exciting that we have, you know, people in the area in the Northeast who are actually working on these projects. So
interesting. And Northampton's a big place where it's happening now. And are there thoughts of growing this into more places throughout New England? And is there thoughts of doing this within the Berkshire Community Land Trust owned lands at this point?
Not. It would sort of depend on the farmer. Mm-hmm. So, but it's a conversation that we think is really important because it's about climate resilience and local food and community, which is, you know, what we're all about.
So you don't necessarily have or want any control over what the farmer actually produces on the land.
The only thing that we really pay attention to is that we do want the farmers to be growing food for people. So we're vegetable farmers, you know, eggs, livestock that is going to be processed here and sold in our general area. Yeah, we don't really work with commodity crop farmers. It just doesn't make sense for our model. We're about supporting the local food system, the local economy.
Yeah, and we've talked about the farming portion. We sort of not really gotten into the housing portion. How does the housing portion of this model work?
So we have two different properties that have housing on them. We have a total of, I think, 23 homes on Berkshire Community Land Trust land.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so basically, Forest Row in Great Barrington is one of our properties. There's 18 units there. It's a mix of single family all up to quadruplex. And basically when the homeowner is, you know, ready to sell, they'll be selling their home, but not the land that the home is on, because that's, you know, in trust. The land is taken out of the equation, so it makes it more affordable. It's not necessarily an affordable housing model. We don't look at income. We're just basically trying to take land out of the market, out of the equation, out of the debt part for the mm-hmm. homeowner or for the farmer. Yeah.
Okay, and these you said single family and multiplexes. Are these all individual homes, or is it like a housing complex?
They're individual homes with lawns. Yeah. I mean, the duplexes, I mean, they're sharing a building.
Of course.
Yeah. But there's lawns and there's trails on Forest Row. And we actually have one property that's on the market right now, 9 Forest Row. There is a residential requirement. So you do need to live and work in the Berkshires. We're not interested in providing a home for a second homeowner. Not that we're against second homeowners, but we're trying to bolster housing for the community.
The
yeah.
Okay. So you obviously have to live and work, but you have to physically live in the house that you buy, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. You don't want somebody buying it and then doing the Airbnb thing.
You really can't do Airbnb in this process. I think we might allow like renting out a room from occasion, or there's some exceptions, but basically no, these properties are not second homes and they're not Airbnbs.
Excellent. Like, how does that whole process work as far as, you know, you own the land, and if somebody does, not to get into the negativity of it, but what if somebody does, like, move it in, and then you find out later that they never actually moved in, and they're subleasing it or subletting it?
Because these are neighborhoods, there's just a lot of community happening, and
somebody will rat them out real fast, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, and we have relationships with all our homeowners, so and that's part of what we believe in too. So you're less likely to run into that. So a really interesting thing in 2008 when the housing crisis happened.
Uh-huh.
Homes that were on land trust land across the nation were much less likely to go into foreclosure. So it does provide more stability, and it's an economic model that one of the ways that seems to help get people into home ownership. And home ownership is actually the cornerstone of being able to build wealth.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, The house you have on the market now, that's on the market now, does that go through the standard real estate process? They hire an agent and they do all that. It looks exactly the same.
It's not exactly the same, actually.
Okay.
So our houses get offered to offered to the people in the area first so whether it's on Forest Row or on our other property, they would get offered to the neighbors first. So they would be aware of it, so they could let their family or friends know that a property is available.
Okay.
And then it goes out to our membership, which is a really good reason to join Berkshire Community Land Trust. And then if they're still not a buyer, then it would go out to the public. And right now it's on the market. This unit's on the market.
Okay, so it goes through a process first, and then it gets on to into the MLS.
Yeah.
Type deal.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's talk about membership on the other side of the break. And we're talking with Beth Carlson, Executive Director of Berkshire Community Land Trust, Inc. And the film Prairie Prophecy, one of the things we're talking about. It's happening this Saturday or this Sunday at the Triplex Theater in Great Barrington. What time does the show start?
3 p.m.
3 p.m. And then there's a panel afterwards. So it should be a great, informative, entertaining day. So check that out. And the websites to go to buy tickets are only $15, and you get some food out of it too, right?
That's right. Yeah.
So where do you go to buy the tickets?
You can go to triplex.org or biffma.org.
All right. So either way, you can get your tickets there. We'll have more with Beth Carlson on the other side of the break here on Morning Drive on WTBR.
Stay tuned for more Morning Drive here on WTBR FM.
This is Pittsfield Community Radio, 89.7 WTBR FM Pittsfield, 88.1 WSBR Lee.
Support for WTBR comes from Greylock Federal Credit Union, proud to support high school arts and sports programs to help our community thrive. Greylock Federal, with locations throughout the Berkshires and online at greylock.org.
And from UCP of Western Massachusetts. UCP of Western Mass is hiring full and part-time opportunities to provide a life without limits for people with disabilities. For more information, ucpwma.org/jobs.
WTBR FM is listener-supported radio. That means we depend on your donations to keep the station on the air. All the local content and the music you love requires your support. You can make your donation today at WTBRFM.com by calling 445-4234 or stopping by our studio at 4 Federico Drive in Pittsfield. You'd be glad you did. Pittsfield Community Radio, for the love of radio.
What would it be like not having PCTV's reliable coverage of our Pittsfield City meetings? Well, the answer is it would be like driving in the darkness without headlights. We need the light to show us exactly what's coming our way. PCTV's coverage is that light. It's so reliable and dependable, we don't even think about not having it, but nothing can be taken for granted. Support this building block of democracy today. It's too important to lose, especially now. Pittsfield Community Television, see it all, decide for yourself.
Join Peter and Jessica to relive the magic of Beatlemania every Tuesday from 4 to 6 p.m. For 5 decades, the Fab Four, where together or on their own, has changed the world of music. Tune in to Pittsfield Community Radio, 89.7 FM, Tuesdays, 4 to 6 p.m.
Support for WTBR comes from Berkshire Community College. Free community college for any Massachusetts resident without a bachelor's degree at BCC. Find out more at berkshirecc.edu. And from Sundrini Awnings and Home Improvement, providing awnings and canopies in Western Mass. Retractable awnings, retractable screens, gutter and gutter protection systems, commercial awnings and screen rooms. Customized solutions available. Online at Sandrini.com.
Radio for people who used to love radio. Welcome back. WTBR.
And now back to the Morning Drive on WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
Welcome back to Morning Drive here on WTBR. Bob Heck here with you on a Wednesday morning. And we're talking with Beth Carlson, Executive Director of Berkshire Community Land Trust, Inc. We mentioned before the break, you know, we talked about a benefit of membership to the organization is you get sort of, before it goes public, you get house listings sent to you. How do you become a member, first off?
Basically, any donation to Berkshire Community Land Trust makes you a member, but you can also donate as a member, and we have a variety of membership levels. Everybody's welcome, so you can volunteer to be a member. You can donate as little as $10. You can donate $10 every month, or you can make a, you know, larger donation of up to, you know, $10,000, $15,000 or whatever. The sky's the limit.
Oh, wow. We really jumped up there, didn't we?
Yeah. The membership dues, you know, help our operating costs and make it possible for us to take on projects and acquire lands. They're really, really important for, and, you know, vital for us to be able to do our work. The benefit is that, our board is democratically organized. So a third of our board are lessees or owners who are on our land. A third of the board are community members. And a third of the board are the professional folks in the community that provide the expertise that we need for a functioning, you know, board and to keep us in good governance. Members get notified early about our events and also about our properties as they come on the market, and are also, you know, in the queue to become board members if that's where they're drawn to be involved.
Okay, and you talked about donations and membership, and you make a donation of $10 or more, you become a member. Is that the entirety of how your funding comes in, or do you get grants, or...
We mostly apply for grants. I think we're mostly donor funded, and then you know, our model is we have a sister organizations. So because of the structure of, because we're a leaseholding organization, so we have a what's called a 501c2. That actually holds the leases, and okay. Then a 501c3, which is the fundraising part of the organization. And this is the way that the land trust models work. So the leasehold and the leases are, you know, lease fees are super low. There's like a nominal land use fee, and there's an administrative fee, and then an education fee. So, but at the end of the year, there's a slight balance in the leaseholding organization's books, so that some of that will come over to the land trust, the BCLT, for operations and for land acquisition. So, but otherwise, yeah, donor funds and grants. And our recent acquisition of River Run Farm was funded by $300,000 from the voters of Great Barrington through CPA funds, $150,000 from the state's Energy and Environmental Affairs Department for a conservation restriction, and then private donations.
So how does the land, how do you choose to acquire pieces of land, as it's like, does it have to be meet a certain criteria for you or for the organization, I should say?
Yeah, it needs to be. There's certain criteria that we want to look at. We can't be taking on, you know, liabilities or, you know, huge problems to solve, mm-hmm. Nor can the potential owner or farmer on land. So we have to look at it that way. River Run Farm, actually, there was a philanthropist who actually stepped in, purchased the land to hold it and take it off the market for us. This farm, which has been farmed since the Dutch settlers acquired the land from the Native Americans. The other people that were looking at it were considering like a gravel pit and, you know, some other like, you know, non-farming activities. So this woman actually purchased the land, took it off the market, and held it for us while we fundraised. And we were able to close on the property in June. We had to mortgage part of the price, so we still owe about $150,000, so we're still fundraising for the property. But it's being farmed. The farmers moved on in actually 2023, and they were able to increase their net profits like by 40% the first year that they were on the land.
So that's interesting. You had a piece of land you wanted. There were other folks, and this is, like you said, it's been farmed on for a long time. And you had some folks that were going to come in and buy the property and use it for something other than farming. So you had a philanthropist who believes in what you're doing, buy it, and basically hold on to it until you can raise the money. Does that happen a lot?
No, it doesn't.
Okay.
No, but we're certainly open to that. Yeah, but it's this was a lot for us to do, so it's really all we've been focusing on for the past couple of years. But we're excited that we're looking at some. We have some other projects that are coming to us, some possible gifts, another situation which might be similar to this farm. Another one, which is what we call a bargain sale, where they would sell us the land for less than market rate. We will bring in partners, you know, as much as possible to help make this possible, you know, to help make it work. Like, we're exploring partnerships with, you know, the Community Development Corporation of the Southern Berkshires and other organizations, you know.
You're talking about CPA money in Great Barrington and that, how that was helpful to you. Are you in that pipeline every year?
Not necessarily, because you really have to have a project and make an application, and it's very involved. So there's maybe another multi-use project coming forward that could be, it could be recreation, housing, farming, and what I call light industry, which would be farming-related commerce. And, you know, if that project were to come to fruition, we would certainly go back to all those, you know, funders and apply.
Do you mainly stick to South County, or has there been discussion about moving to Central Berkshire County, the Pittsfield area, or something like that?
We certainly would consider anything in the Berkshires. Yeah, we do. Like, it is a community land trust, and it's meant to function, you know, very locally. But, you know, if we get the chance to save farmland somewhere, you know, we would see what we could do to make it happen.
So you're mainly interested in farmland and preserving farmland, more importantly.
Well, and housing. Yeah, and housing. But I think we would not do housing in Pittsfield or, you know, or North Adams. There's actually a Northern Berkshire Community Land Trust.
Oh, there is. Okay.
They're just getting off the ground. And we're actually their fiscal sponsor. So and we've sort of helped them along their process. And one of their board president also serves on our board.
So there's another organization, and there's nothing like this covering Central Berkshire at the moment.
Not at the moment, but I think both of us would look at projects
kind of work together on
that.
Well, that's interesting that something came up in North County, and you folks have been helpful to help them get off the ground. Do you have any idea how far off the ground they are at this point? Or
they're still filing for their 501c3. They have that application in process, and they're fundraising. I believe they're working on a website. They have a board, which is pretty decent. I think they've got 9 people on their board so far. Yeah. And they're mostly interested in housing in North Adams area, but they're starting to talk about farming as well.
Yeah, I mean, I just can't think, and there probably is. I just, when I think North Adams, I don't really think farmland. But is there some up there? I know, probably asking something you're not expertise in again.
Well, I was just on a call with BNRC, the Berkshire Natural Resources Council, and there is a lot of farmland in Williamstown, Adams, you know, North Adams area that is critical and that is at risk.
Now, how about throughout the rest of the state? Do you collaborate with people throughout the state or throughout New England? How does that all work?
There's a network of land trusts across Massachusetts. There's, I think, about 20 of us.
Okay.
So we're regularly on calls with them, and we're supporting, like, housing policy with the state. Is there certain housing policy that would benefit our model, which is an ownership model? So, yeah, we are in conversations with all of those folks.
Oh, wow. And is there somebody within the state, within the organizations within the state, who's like the main lobbyist to, you know, get legislation that would help you further along your cause?
There's some folks more in the Boston area and from the Dudley Street Neighborhood Initiative that are very active and in regular conversation with our legislators.
Interesting. I'm learning so much about stuff I didn't. That's why I love this show, you know.
Yeah.
I learned so much about things that I didn't even know really was happening in the Berkshires and throughout the state of Massachusetts. This is such an interesting model. We're here with Beth Carlson, Executive Director of the Berkshire Community Land Trust. And let's go back to the folks just tuning in. Coming up this Sunday, you have the film screening. Tell us about it.
Yeah, Prairie Prophecy, which is about Wes Jackson's work with the Land Institute developing perennial crops. We're showing an hour-long version of the film and a really great panel with some folks who actually have a lot of experience with this type of perennial crop. And then so the short version of the film will be followed by a panel moderated by Lillian Lennox. This is a partnership with the Berkshire International Film Festival, and it's at the Triplex after the film and panel. There's a reception with food. So it'll be a really great time.
And $15 gets you in the door. Tell me more about the panelists and what they're probably going to be discussing.
So Will Conklin of Greenagers, the executive director of Greenagers, is on the panel.
And what exactly is Greenagers?
Greenagers is an organization that provides youth with jobs in farming and stewardship, trail maintenance. They actually have a farm, and they are growing a perennial mix from the Land Institute.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Yeah, on their property, which is one reason that's why Will's on the panel. Yeah. And then we have somebody from Piyush Laboratoire, and I know I'm mispronouncing his last name, from Grow Food Northampton, who's also growing Kernza, which is the grain that's talked about in the film. And Lisa Winkler of Middlebury College's New Perennials Project, where they're also working with perennial crops in the Northeast Vermont, which is, you know, great. And then Michael Johnson, who's the filmmaker who interviewed Wes Jackson, will be on the panel. And if I didn't say so, it's moderated by Lillian Lennox of the Roaring Brook Foundation, who actually supports this particular film series that we're a part of.
Oh, that's interesting. So again, that's coming up Sunday at 3:00. And you can get your tickets for only $15. It's called Prairie Prophecy. And that's tough to say. Prairie Prophecy. That's Prairie Prophecy. Prairie Prophecy. This looks really interesting. And it's going to be about how, wheat is typically not strong. You get to till it all the time. And in this form of wheat where you're just basically taking the best of the best of the wheat crop and turning them into a stronger overall wheat grain crop.
Exactly. Yeah.
And you can make beer out of it. So that's...
You can make beer out of it. There's actually, they did another little short called How Beer Will Save the World about beer that's made with Kernza. And we didn't bring that version, that film here this time.
Okay.
Maybe another time.
I'd be down for that.
There's some great t-shirts.
That is coming up Sunday, and we'll go back to membership real quick. Where do you go? What's your website where you can learn more about everything that's happening?
It's BerkshireCommunityLandTrust.org. On there, you can go to the donate page or to the membership page, either one. Please do support us because it is really important. It really makes a difference for our work and for our ability to acquire more land and to create more housing for the local community and save farmland.
And how important, I was perusing around the website earlier, how important is the sustainability of, the environment to what you do?
It's a core tenet of the Berkshire Community Land Trust, and that is actually something that we have agreements with all our homeowners and our farmers. We have land management plans, which it varies per farmer and per farming practice because you do need to be flexible, but we support environmentally friendly practices. We were trying to create a world where the animals and the plants and the people can live together, as much as possible. So environment is really important to the organization.
Does this sort of change how, like, irrigation is done on the farms and water use and things along those lines?
Both of our farms actually have conservation restrictions on them. So there is a set of, things that you can do on that land and things you can't do. One of the farms is abutting the Carner watershed. Carner Brook watershed in Egremont. So whatever happens on the site does have to, follow those rules so the water is protected and the wildlife is protected.
Yeah, and that makes sense, especially along the watershed where, I assume you're advocate for no pesticides or anything along those lines, but if you're doing pesticides and things like that by the water brook, I mean, that can lead to all sorts of pollution.
Yeah. Yeah, and interesting, you know, regenerative or eco-agricultural farming, you know, creates food that's good for people, and it also creates environments that are good for animals and wildlife. So it really does go hand in hand. It's good for us as well.
Beth Carlson, Executive Director of the Berkshire Community Land Trust. Thank you so much for joining us. And again, film screening this Sunday, Prairie Prophecy. It is at the Triplex Theater. $15 gets you in the door. It's an hour-long film with an educational panel afterwards and then some food. Beth, tell us one more time how you can get tickets.
On the Triplex website or on the Berkshire International Film Festival website.
So get your tickets. Again, that's coming up this Saturday or this Sunday. And make sure you check it out at the Triplex Theater. Beth, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much. This was lots of fun.
All right. I learned a whole lot. It's always good when I learn a lot. So Sean is back in tomorrow, and I'll be back with you on Morning Drive next week. Thanks so much for tuning in. Have a great day. We'll talk to you soon.